In Asia, the swastika is an auspicious sign for good fortune, while in the West, it's a controversial and hated symbol of fascism. I'm Mukti Jane Campion, and in this week's BBC World Service documentary, I'll be exploring whether these two views can ever be reconciled in Reclaiming the Swastika.
Swastika.
The swastika today is still one of the most menacing and offensive symbols of modern history. It still raises images of the Third Reich, it raises images of the Holocaust.
Swastika.
For the Jewish people, the swastika is definitely a symbol of fear and suppression, a symbol of extermination. It's a symbol that we will never ever be able to change.
First of all, it's important to understand that the swastika exists in every culture in the world.
Swastika.
Philfot.
Jarga.
Hakenkreuz.
Swarga.
Triskelion.
Manji.
It is a universal symbol, and it's often based upon the shapes of nature. The way a flower blossoms, the way water runs into a drain. A spiraling shape that usually has several arms. From this, I believe strongly, is created this symbol, which is a symbol of eternal love to everyone, all well-being.
A universal sign of love or a menacing symbol of fascism? As an Indian raised in Britain, I am accustomed to seeing the swastika as both. There was one inscribed on the entrance of my grandmother's house in India and on the homes of all her neighbours. In Indian culture, it's an auspicious sign found everywhere, carved inside ancient temples, daubed on shiny new cars, and even drawn on the front of accounting books. It may be a swastika that faces right or left. It may have straight limbs or curved. It may have dots in each corner, but it's just a part of everyday life. The word swastika comes from the ancient Indian language of Sanskrit. Konstantin Borisov is a Russian linguist who's been studying Sanskrit and the history of the swastika.
If we look at the word swastika, if we take the ka off, we are left with two words, which is swa and asti. Now, both of the words are very ancient. Asti is from the same root as we have is in English, or ist in Germany, or jest in Russia, meaning of being. Swa is used quite extensively in Sanskrit to express goodness. So just adding this prefix to a word, something which is very positive.
So literally, swastika means well-being. But in the West, that meaning has long been overshadowed by its Nazi association, since when it became a taboo subject for academic study. However, in recent years, there's been something of a revival, one that's shedding new light on the pre-Nazi origins and use of the swastika in the West.
Well, when I was a kid, I found a Nazi flag. It was in my cousin's house. His father had brought it back from the war.
Steve Heller teaches at the New York School of Visual Arts, and he's the author of a book called The Swastika, Symbol Beyond Redemption.
And I just found it hypnotic, partly because it was a war theme and I was a kid and it was the 50s, but partly just the graphic strength, the black and white and red, was alluring. So I became fascinated with it. I'm also a Jewish kid from New York. Part of my family perished during the Holocaust. The symbol just represented something to me that I wanted to grapple with.
Steve Heller began collecting swastika objects and researching the way the symbol has been used in the past.
I found package designs that used it. I saw swastikas in architectural friezes that had nothing to do with the Nazis. They were in New York City.
100 years ago, there was a huge fad for the swastika. It was a motif many Western travellers had seen in Asia and adopted enthusiastically back home. It was widely used on public buildings, on advertising, banknotes and textiles. Rudyard Kipling famously put it on his book covers. Carlsberg stamped it on the bottom of their beer bottles. The RAF painted it on their planes as late as 1939.
I started collecting more and more of this swastika ephemera, and I found it as used by Coca-Cola in the turn of the century. The Boy Scouts used it. The Girls Club of the United States used it. They called their magazine Swastika. They gave away swastika pins as the highest honor for selling magazines to people. As I probed further, I saw that the swastika wasn't just drawn out of thin air by the Nazi Party. It had a history in Germany before that.
It was in the 19th century, while translating ancient Indian texts such as the Rig Veda, that European scholars noticed similarities between German and Sanskrit. They concluded there must have been some deep ancestral link between Germans and Indians, which they labelled Aryan, using a term found in the Rig Veda. German nationalists grabbed at the idea and turned what was a linguistic connection into something much more, imagining a glorious Aryan super-race of godlike warriors from which they believed themselves to be descended.
Groups of occultists that were forming in Germany at the time, before World War I and after World War I, ascribed a certain exclusivity to the German race, a race that came from these gods in Aryan culture being a kind of true white culture within the Indian framework. And the swastika was adopted because they found it in India as this mystical sign. There was a magazine called Astara that proffered this idea of blonde, blue-eyed, white-skinned supermen. And Hitler is said to have been a subscriber, or at least a reader, of Astara. The person who founded the organization was in fact a Catholic priest who was excommunicated. But there's a swastika from the Abbey at Lembeck in Austria, which is said to be the first time Hitler saw the swastika.
Adolf Hitler appropriated the swastika in 1920, creating the distinctive red, white and black flag of the Nazi Party.
Hitler claimed that he himself had designed the swastika flag.
Dr. Christian Gerschel at the University of Manchester studies the social and cultural history of the Third Reich.
So Hitler said the swastika flag was highly significant. The red part revealed the social ideas of national socialism. The white bit of the swastika flag reflected the ultra-nationalist ideas of national socialism. And the swastika itself symbolized the Aryan struggle, which would always be anti-Semitic. So this is what Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf, published in 1925.
And was he actually using the word swastika?
Hitler used the German word Hakenkreuz. German ethnographers would have used the word swastika, exactly the same word in German, but Hitler and the Nazis were keen to Germanize this foreign symbol for their own purposes, because the Nazis couldn't really say openly as an ultra-nationalist movement that the swastika symbol had actually come from foreign countries, principally India.
The swastika soon became a tightly controlled tool of propaganda that marked the Nazis' rise to power.
It was designed to be used everywhere. Banners, armbands, badges, and it was your pass through a very restrictive German culture.
For German Jews, the swastika must have been an extremely menacing symbol. They saw themselves as German citizens, and they must have found it extremely offensive, to say the least, to see this anti-Semitic, racist symbol becoming the German official flag. Let's not forget that many German Jews had fought for Germany in the First World War, and they were completely shocked when they were effectively relegated to the status of second-class citizens.
And it wasn't just German Jews who saw the swastika flag as a threat.
I must tell you something. I don't play very much now because a bit of arthritis in my hand.
Freddie Nola is 93 and lives in North London. But in the 1930s, he was still living in Vienna in a middle-class Jewish family.
This is my family in Vienna in 1938. These are my parents. We were three brothers. We were quite well known, actually, the youngest chamber music trio.
Freddie was 17 when the Germans invaded Austria in March 1938.
As soon as the Germans came in, Austria was full of swastika flags all the buildings, they had to put up a swastika flag. I was in high school, but as soon as the Germans came in, immediately we were thrown out of the high school. Jews were not allowed to learn in school with Christian children.
So as a teenager, you were already familiar with the swastika as an anti-Semitic emblem?
Oh, absolutely. We knew that the swastika means atrocities against the Jews.
Freddy Nola escaped first to Belgium and then to France. But in 1943, he was caught and deported to Auschwitz, where he endured a brutal regime of starvation and forced labour. He was one of the camp's very few survivors at the end of the war. His parents and countless other family and friends died at the hands of the Nazis and their collaborators.
The swastika, as far as I'm concerned, was a power. They can do with us whatever they want. They put a fear into us. We know if we're doing something against them, we will be killed.
When did the tide turn? When did people stop using the swastika? The Allies, almost immediately after Nazi Germany's defeat in May 1945, banned the swastika. So it is interesting how such a powerful symbol, which almost every German had been using over the 12 years of the Third Reich, how this symbol almost disappeared completely overnight. The swastika is still banned in Germany today, so anyone displaying the swastika is committing a criminal offence.
But clearly the story of the swastika as an anti-Semitic symbol is not over, with neo-Nazi groups still using it across the world. Freddy Nola again.
So if they'd put the swastika on gravestones or something, or on synagogues, it puts a fear into us. Surely it shouldn't happen again.
In 2007, Germany tried to ban the use of the swastika in the EU. Hindu groups throughout Europe came together to successfully oppose the plan, fearing it would remove their right to use it as a spiritual symbol. Steve Heller again.
I don't support banning things. I support debating things. My own book on the swastika, Symbol Beyond Redemption, has a question mark at the end of it. Not because I would like to see it banned forever, but I want to see that conversation take place, and that allows us to talk about the power of symbols in our lives.
So can there ever be any prospect of stopping the swastika being used as a symbol of aggression and hate? A growing number of people think there can, and that first off, the myth of the Aryan race needs to be firmly scotched. The concept of race has long been discredited, and the use of the word Aryan by white supremacists is, well, just plain wrong. Sanskrit scholar Konstantin Borisov again.
The irony is that if we read the Rig Veda, which is the oldest source, we do not find there Aryans as they mentioned, white super race riding chariots, crushing everybody and subjugating other people. No, if you read Rig Veda, there's about 30 times it mentions Aryans. Basically, the main meaning is the one who follows the traditions of his country, the one who is faithful to the gods of his country, a good family man, praised by everybody. You may be black and you may be white, you may be, say, blue striped with pink. But if you want to become an Arya, it's very simple. You just become worthy of praising by others and you become an Arya.
And it now seems that to see the swastika as an Aryan symbol, exclusively rooted in some mystical Indian past, is also mistaken. Archaeological finds have long demonstrated that the swastika is a very old symbol, but its geographic origins are by no means limited to India. It's found in ancient cultures from China right across Europe, with some of the oldest now being identified in the area of Eastern Europe and Russia. And to my surprise, the place which best demonstrates the swastika's long European history turns out to be Ukraine. Tetiana Radievska is head of research at the National Museum of the History of Ukraine in Kiev, and she's carefully unwrapping one of their most prized treasures, which was found 100 miles away near the Russian border.
So this is a figurine from a Mizin village of late Paleolithic period.
It's a small bird, about 10 centimetres long, made from mammoth tusk ivory, and it's decorated with the oldest identified swastika pattern in the world.
We have a radiocarbon dating, and it dates from 15,000 years.
It's astonishing to see something so beautifully preserved from 15,000 years ago. Engraved on one side of the bird is a large triangle, and on the other, what looks like a series of swastikas joined together in a pattern known as a meander. This association of swastikas with a triangle or rhombus on female figurines is a recurring theme in many ancient artifacts and supports the idea that the swastika started out as a fertility symbol.
A whole set of figurines were found there in the place of the settlement, and some of them are phallic symbols, and some of them are figures of female birds.
A paleontologist by the name of Valentina Bibikova made an unexpected discovery when she examined a cross-section of some ivory tusk and saw the naturally occurring pattern on it.
The inside of the tusk actually has a pattern that is somewhat similar to a meander pattern. So in a way we can say that a prehistoric man maybe portrayed what he saw actually in nature, because a mammoth was also a symbol of fertility, of well-being. Also, if you look closer, you can
see. Tetiana hands me a chunk of ivory tusk and a magnifying glass.
It's not actually a mammoth tusk, but it's an elephant tusk.
Wow! That is absolutely the same pattern.
Can you?
Yes! That's amazing. So that could actually be the origin of the pattern that gave rise to
Swastika. In my opinion, it's one of the most convincing versions of interpretation.
Of course, the swastika may have more than one origin, independently created in different times and places, perhaps inspired by other natural phenomena.
So now we're going to go and see some younger swastikas, is that right?
The museum in Kiev is the perfect place to see how the swastika evolved and diversified in different cultures on the territory of Ukraine.
The swastika appears here during the Middle Bronze Age and then in Late Bronze Age. And
here in Kiev, there are a number of Bronze Age pots with swastikas dating from around 4,000 years ago.
They were found at the beginning of the 20th century, but then when Germans came here, they were very interested because they want to say that Aryan came here from the north and that swastika was evidence of Aryans.
So the Germans actually took them away from Ukraine?
Yes.
Because they thought they were a sign of Aryan culture and they wanted to investigate?
They were very greedy to have it all in Germany.
Thankfully, the museum did get them back after the war.
In our collection, we have some items from the Grecian period. They come from Greek colonies that were founded on the territory of Ukraine in the 7th century BC.
By the time of the ancient Greeks, there are architectural features with interlinked swastikas, such as those that form the distinctive Greek key pattern found on tiles and carpets even today. There are also terracotta vases, beautifully painted with swastikas that have curly limbs, like unfurling tendrils.
So this ornament of swastika was really very popular with the Grecian period. And here the animal is the goat, and under his belly there is a swastika.
What we know about the swastika in the archaeological record is necessarily limited by which materials are preserved, such as the stone seals from the Indus Valley or terracotta figurines from Troy. But here in the museum in Kiev, there's a remarkable textile fragment dating back to the 12th century of a gold-embroidered standing collar, probably belonging to a Slav princess.
The embroidery had a complex pattern with crosses, swastikas, and some glass inserts. And rich women like that decorated especially the collar. If they were embroidered well, they would be protective.
So the collar was embroidered with swastikas in order to ward off evil. Interestingly, it's a practice that continues in China today. We may never know the full meaning of all the different swastikas used by people in the ancient past, but that swastikas appear in so many different places over such a huge time span and in so many similar objects shows a common cultural importance. Konstantin Borisov again.
In this world where the tendency is to keep dividing and separating What we need to understand that this is part of our common culture. The swastika is one of the symbols that should be meant to unite us and not to divide us. But to understand it, we need to know its origins, its history. Education, education, and education. There's no any other way.
And that education is now coming from many different quarters.
I'm in the heart of Copenhagen's pedestrianised city centre, where I've come to visit a very smart tattoo parlour called Meat Shop.
My name is Peter Walrus Madsen. I'm a tattoo artist. I own Meat Shop Tattoo. And one of the things that we are renowned for is being a great big part of the swastika movement.
Last year, they declared November the 13th, Learn to Love the Swastika Day.
We had almost 100 tattoo artists and scarificators around the world, all working with the purpose of giving away free swastikas, either as tattoos or scars, to enlighten people about the true meaning behind the swastika.
And what is that meaning for you?
Well, to me, because I'm Scandinavian, the swastika is a lot about primal force. In Scandinavia, it's been used as a symbol of both good luck and light, but also like the core energy and force behind nature, the growth of a tree, thunder, the waves, this ancient strength. And on my left arm I have one that's rather prominent, but it's a little bit obscure since it's an Iron Age swastika.
Peter Madsen proudly shows me swastika tattoos on his own body.
To us, the only swastika that has turned bad is straight-armed black swastika or Hakenkreuz on a white circle on a red flag. That is something we relate to a very negative time in history, something not to be forgotten at all. We just want people to know as well that the swastika comes in thousands of different shapes with hundreds of purposes, but none of these purposes are negative. There are nowhere in history besides from Germany in 1940 where this symbol has been used for anything bad.
You say that, but it is still used by fascist groups in modern times in a very aggressive way. So it's not just historical, is it?
Well, it's true that people still choose to misuse the symbol, but we are trying to show the right-wing fascists that it's wrong to use this symbol. But the only thing we can do is try to enlighten the public that this symbol is a good symbol, and thereby destroying the use of it for the fascists. If you can take away such a powerful symbol from that movement, then what we do is spreading love.
Peter says that last year's Love the Swastika Day was such a success, they had to turn people away.
We've worldwide made almost 1,000 free swastikas on that day. That's a lot. That's a lot of people walking away with a swastika.
One of those people was Christina Mayer, who now has a swastika tattoo on her back.
My name is Christina, I'm 37 years old, and I work as a secretary at a large hospital in Copenhagen. And I had my first tattoo a year ago, almost, and I decided that it had to be a swastika because, to me, I believe in the Old Norse mythology. And in the Old Norse mythology, the swastika is a sign of good fortune, luck, and all the good things in life. And it was important for me to show that the symbol is something positive.
Did it make you go out and talk to people about the swastika more?
Absolutely, it did. And people go, ooh, swastika, isn't that something with Nazis and, you know, evil and all that? And then I tell them, no, it's not. It is an age-old symbol, and it is nothing like what the Nazis made it into. We need to take it back, and we need to show the world that this is a beautiful symbol, and it doesn't deserve the fate that it got.
Back in North London, I wanted to find out what Holocaust survivor Freddie Nola would make of the ancient swastikas I'd seen in Kiev and in the Copenhagen tattoo parlour. Would they change his view of the swastika as purely a symbol of Nazi evil?
Do you want to look at some pictures?
Please, I would love to see pictures, yes.
So this is the 15,000 years old bird.
Wow.
Now this is a Bronze Age swastika. Also from Ukraine. Can you see the shape there?
Yeah, look at that, yeah.
Yeah. This is from the Greek times. Can you see the curly one there?
Oh, yes, yeah. I must say, this doesn't offend me.
It doesn't offend you?
No.
The curly ones, the ones with the curved arms.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. You know, that's fine.
So far, so good. Freddie seemed to be genuinely okay with some of the ancient swastika designs. But when we came to Peter Madsen's tattoos, it was a different story.
This is some of the tattoos of the swastikas that he's done.
Yeah, look at them, yeah.
And he sees this very much as a beautiful symbol.
No, not for me.
Not for you.
No. How stupid, how could he put it on his body? I just can't understand it because I've been through it.
Freddie rolled up his shirt sleeve to show me the tattoo he still has on his left arm. It's the number that was indelibly printed on his body on entering Auschwitz.
The people who went through the Holocaust, we will always remember what the swastika was like in our life. But I think it's interesting for you to tell this story that that symbol was not always the symbol of fascism.
But it doesn't change your view about the swastika's future.
No, it will never change that, no.
You see a black, heavy swastika.
Yeah.
It's still evil, it still reminds you.
Very evil, yeah. There's the other one which you showed me, which curves.
This one here.
This one, lovely, doesn't affect me at all. It's funny.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only a symbol.
It's only a symbol, and yet it has this power.
It has the power, yeah.
Reclaiming the Swastika was produced and presented by Mukti Jane Campion, and the studio editor was Chris Eldon Lee. It was a CultureWise production for BBC World Service. The